feelings come and go. The things that are most important to us when we're younger fade away to the point that we might not even have a memory that they were ever important to us at all. When we're faced with perhaps some writing or creations that we did 10, 20 years ago, we can't believe that this was ever something that took all of our time and all of our thought. But there's one feeling I've had consistently all of my life, and that is the excitement when I'm given a new tool to work with, or a new environment to script or write programs in, and that idea that if I just learn the magic formulas, and I take these whirling, beautiful, creative thoughts and put them through the ringer of this program, something truly spectacular is going to come out the other end. Such was the case when I spent 2.5 months making a single demo movie that has never been seen. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. My time at Focus Studios, the startup that came out of the wreckage of Cygnosis US before it moved away from Boston, was only about a year. But there was so much that I learned during that time. I learned about putting together a game with the idea of selling it. I learned about the ups and downs of working with friends. I learned in a very brutal way what a development system truly is. And I also learned an awful lot about myself and where I wanted to be in life. Focus Studios had a number of projects in its very short life. It was a very small group of people and run by Mark Tsai, using some money borrowed from his family, along with arranging a few contracts with Sony upon leaving Cygnosis. It seemed, in 1996, that the world was before us. The PlayStation was just becoming a huge hit. There were all sorts of amazing games coming out for PCs, and it was just a matter of taking one of our ideas, getting some funding behind it, and we'd have enormous amounts of success going forward. Working there felt like luxury itself. The company had previously had about 20 or 30 people in that office space, and now it only had about 6. It was, looking back, overindulgent and a little bit aspirational to think that we could just take over the space of a company that had existed in one form or another for 15 years and just keep along, able to make the payments on rent and utilities and everything else. Through the year that Focus Studios existed, we worked on proposing 2 major games. It's probably best to call them by their genres. One was a racing game, and the other one was a space game. Let's just talk about the racing game. The racing game was all Mark Tsai. He owned a couple RX-7s, adored working with them, and a lot of that enthusiasm was going into this product idea. It was going to be a kind of space racer that took place in an imagined virtual world where it was multicolored grid lines and black backgrounds and an incredible amount of speed. The conceit, the central idea, was that it was much easier to render a grid pattern than it was to render solid objects. You'd be able to just draw lines and be able to have everything move incredibly fast to give you an illusion of speed, and that would be our fulcrum, our way into making something that would gain attention. Graphically, it would be stunning. It would be a world that felt like it was coming out of Tron or Lawnmower Man or any of a number of genre films that showed an inside computer world. The concepts behind it were kind of lifted from Johnny Mnemonic and Neuromancer and other William Gibson work. It was the idea that there were these large multinational corporations that lived within a virtual space, and you, as some sort of keyboard jockey, would build together some sort of racer to earn money and pick up points and do hacking, using all of these kind of repurposed, stolen parts to be able to gain reputation, funding, and power. I'm sure if you had sat us down and tried to get us to talk about what this game was, we would quickly go for all of the best parts of every game genre that was out there. It would have elements of an RPG. It would be science fiction and a space game, but also have action and racing. At its core, though, the idea was a bunch of speed going over a large amount of interesting landscapes that would go by very fast, and having a very intense palette, one that was going to be all contrast and bright lines. Mark, and the rest of us, all believed that if we just got this pitch in front of the right desk, and if we used Mark's contacts within the industry, we'd be working on this full-time for the next 2 to 3 years and create something that would sell millions and millions of copies. I've been lucky enough to spend some time talking with John Romero, and when he tells me about the story of id's initial work, it was that same sort of all-in feeling, the idea to rent a house and live there together and work on code and make things happen, to have an office where you never left and every day would be spent polishing or adding a feature or testing it. It was the idea that you weren't just signing on for some sort of product, some sort of work, but that you were going to imbue all of the spirit, all of the strangeness, all of the personality and the energy of all of these people working on it, and that the final product would be, in some ways, the best elements of all of you, captured and enjoyed for years to come. We thought our racing game was going to be that. We were positive. Now, let me spoil this for you. That game was not made. It wasn't in any way built, coded, or created. There were no prototypes. There were no finalized bits of code just waiting for someone to pay for them. At the time, we didn't have middleware engines. We didn't have these game engines that would allow you to take models and create everything in a way that it was working enough to get the idea to show them to people and see where it worked. We didn't have any of that. If you were going to make a game, you had to make the engine that drove it. Now, we believed that the grid idea was going to make the game incredibly fast, so of course we had to write it from scratch if we were going to do it right, but that meant that if we were going to start down that road, we needed funding. We needed real funding. Funding that would come from a major publisher, giving us enough to work for a year on the game and then see how many of the milestones we had hit and then keep going. We needed a real big support structure. To do that, we had to make some sort of a demo tape, something that we could play for possible funders to enable us to get the investment that we needed. I was the art director of Focus Studios at the time. I'd done some artwork while I was at Psygnosis, and based on that, Mark had hired me to do all sorts of visual ideas, including working on our very expensive, very involved business card, which was so expensive at the time that it was costing $1.25 for each business card. I still have them because I just can't believe that I have $500 worth of business cards in a box. But Mark had me working on car logos, the idea being that we were going to create very involved backstories for each of the racing companies that were creating these virtual cars that you could get your hands on and modify. The idea was that some would come from the Japanese Yakuza, and some would be a redone Indian company that had made the transition to the virtual world. We were going to have these backstories going back maybe decades or centuries for each company, so the logos and the branding and the idea of the graphic design all had to come from these influences. He had me designing all sorts of logos, and I was doing this in 3D Studio. And sometimes it would be really effective, and other times, not so much. I remember having conversations with Mark in his office, and we would talk about the lines of the logo and whether or not it was unique and reflective. He was fascinated at the idea that these companies could include so much of a message in their very simple logos, and those simple logos would work across a whole variety of medium. You could have a business card with a black outline, and it would be as powerful as what showed at the end of a car commercial. This was an incredible challenge for me. This was not my training, and it was not my background at all. But when you're working off the energy of a startup like this, you figure a little more grease, a little more late night, a little more energy, just press your face against the screen, make it work, and it will. The vehicle designs I was working on were intended to reference car companies, but also be able to be rendered in this relatively simple engine that was going to come out. It's worthwhile noting that this is all before 3D accelerators and cards that are dedicated to doing 3D graphics, so whatever you're doing has to be done with an eye on how many polygons, how many triangles it's going to require. Keeping the stylishness, the sense of possibility, but also the number of triangles in your head at the same time, that's what really burned up my brain cells. What this all culminated in was my creating a movie that demonstrated the game and the game ideals. Looking back, I can't imagine why I thought I could do this alone. And I did, essentially, do it alone. I took Mark's graphic ideas, ideas from the other coworkers, and started putting them into 3D Studio models. 3D Studio is both really easy and really difficult to use, depending on what you're trying to do. If you wanted to send things along a preformed motion path, that was a simple command. But one small change in your polygons and one small change in your system might take you a day to re-render. I tried all sorts of tricks as I learned how this program worked. It was something that now I can't believe I did. If you work in 3D now, the system in some ways is constantly re-rendering what you're looking at so that you can see instantly what change you made. The idea that I was working in a wireframe environment and then I would have to wait anywhere between 5 and 20 minutes to see what I had done come to life just astounds me. The patience I showed, the amount of soda I must have drank waiting for the next move, the things I wrote down in paper in between rendering, and then, somewhere at the end of it, having to have a 3-minute movie that demonstrated all the different possibilities of the game. It's amazing what you'll do when you don't realize it's impossible. This is something that I have encountered in projects I've worked on that turn out to be much huger than I thought at the beginning. Whereas in the first few days and weeks of the project, I was working on a single machine and then rendering some ideas and then bringing them over to Mark at the end of the day to see what he thought. By the end of the project, I have 3 or 4 machines all connected through a local network, and they're being assigned different frames to render. It's actually a distributed networked rendering system in 1996 that was using a pretty weird and obscure feature of 3D Studio to produce these very large sequences, and then Mark making commentary on the motion or the look to make it more accurate to the vision of what he was going for. All in all, I think I spent 2 months on this project. Coming in at the beginning of the day, moving a bunch of graphics around in 3D Studio, rendering sequences, and then piecing them together for Mark to see. We had a whole little story there, the logo of the game followed by watching a ship being built, then the landscape, this grid pattern forming out of a flat plain into a mountainous region where different levels had different amounts of color, and it was all moving around in 3D space to a pumping soundtrack. Cars would start flying across the landscape, and different features of the game that we wanted to highlight would be in the foreground or the background until they all converged on a point and exploded, and we saw the logo again. I had made animated films before, and this felt like it was going to be the most difficult animated film I'd ever worked on. And here's the thing. It never went anywhere. Focus Studios started to run into money problems pretty quickly. We had a case where a vendor, name of Microsoft, stiffed us on a contracting deal. And then the money started to dry up, and we started to go after all sorts of approaches to making more money, and the company ultimately went under. That demonstration of a cars and cyberspace game never made it in front of any funders, in front of any publishers. I'm not 100% sure if the graphic files are anywhere, if there's any evidence of this movie that I spent 2 months on. It definitely never became part of a presentation, and we never wrote anything in terms of code to make any of it work. We were just trying to keep our heads above water, and the water was unquestionably winning the battle. Ultimately, I moved away into Unix administration. I just had to leave the company. I didn't have any money. I was having trouble eating, making rent. I needed to move on. And Mark, for his part, felt terrible that this dream never came true. He ended up moving into other parts of the video game industry and continued working there for decades. But for me, that time was over. I always felt bad that Mark's dream never came true, that the world never quite got the excitement, the wonder, the aesthetic of his cyberspace racing game. But I wouldn't have walked away for all of the things that I learned while I was there, working on that impossibly large project that never went anywhere. Prepared me for working on things like the BBS documentary, for working years on end without knowing what the ultimate product would be, to put little bits of myself and personality into every aspect of it, in the packaging and design and DVD production and the shots, and make the whole thing a reflection of how I lived my life between the times I was 30 to 34, to set out on a journey whose destination was completely out of view, unaware of what was going to ultimately come of all this, but never swaying from assuming it would all go well. So while there's probably a storage unit or a landfill that contains the total .avi file of my 2 months of work, I'm so glad that Mark gave me the opportunity to reach for that goal. And while Mark's racing game never made it over the finish line, this mechanic that he believed in went on to win an incredible amount of races. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, and Joshua Stein, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Whenever I mention that there's some lost piece of data, people assume, with my branding and character now, that it eats away at my soul that it's not available. I know that in creative industries, there are enormous stacks, enormous amounts of data and drawings and plans that are made that are completely lost. It is such an intense process to make what we think of as an edited, finished, programmed, and polished game, movie, studio album, you name it. It absolutely has so much more data. Anytime we get lucky enough to see a glance inside of a film production or studio album, we see how much was left on the table, how many alternate takes and how many songs are lost or changed utterly into something unrecognizable from the initial demo. I don't in any way regret that there's no way to really see this film. Instead, I just revel in what we have found and what we do discover. And every day, on my job and elsewhere, we work together and find a floppy disk, a hard drive, a zip file for something that nobody thought still existed or maybe never knew existed in the first place. That's like Christmas every single day. And if my own story has a few holes in it, well, that's just the roll of the die. The files may be gone, but the dream that brought them to life in the first place never died.